Let's open to Genesis chapter number 6, verse number 11, where we will now get into the details of the flood which Noah and his family came through by the hand of the Lord. Now, just to get our minds wrapped around the chronology here, according to the Alexandrian Septuagint numbers, that's the Greek Old Testament, which I think is the more reasonable and more trustworthy numbers in the book of Genesis, the flood happened 2,262 years after creation. So that means that the Adam and Eve generation, the first generation, long dead. Pretty much the only generations alive are going to be the last three, maybe parts of the last four generations. We're going to find out that Noah will be 600 years old when the flood starts, and he's apparently only got a few of his kids still living at home. So he and his wife seem to have reached that point somewhere around year 500 of life, where they're not having any more kids. You know, they've shifted into that grandfather, grandmother mode. Now, verse number 11 of chapter 6 reminds us of the situation that has precipitated God's decision that now he has to pull the plug on creation. Genesis 6:11. Now, the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. God saw the earth, behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. So everything is rotten. You remember when we were first doing the story of creation, God kept saying, it is good, it is good, it is good. And he finishes with, it is very good. Because everything was exactly as he had intended. Everything was working the way he had planned. Everything was according to his original design specifications. It was perfect. But once sin entered into the world, things began to unravel. And humans, generation after generation, are making free will choices that go against God. And then, apparently fairly recently, we've had some of the fallen angels, a select group of them, that have started playing around with the genetic code for their own purposes. They seem to be taking human women that they feel are suitable for their own purposes of making hybrids and bearing these hybrids into the world to be used for the advancement of apparently the bad angels' agenda. And so everything is falling apart. I believe that not only were these fallen angels playing around with the human genome, I think they were also playing around with the animal genome as well, perhaps even some of the plants. And so everything of God's creation has been, as it says right here, corrupted. It is bad. And so the only choice that God has is start over. Fresh start. Wipe it all out. And so God comes and talks specifically to the only man that is still living by his standards. His grandfather is dead. his father is dead. So of his line, which seems to have been committed to the true and living God, he's the only guy left in that line other than his, we're going to call them minor children, even though they're somewhere around 100. So God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh. So when he says all flesh here, he doesn't just simply mean human beings. He means all the animals. They're all going to be wiped out. And the reason for it is, he says, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. So God is going to wipe out all life on land and start fresh, because that's the place that has been corrupted. That's the place, apparently, where humanity's choices and the choices of these fallen angels have made things unworkable. And so this is God's instruction to Noah. Verse 14, make for yourself an ark of gophar wood. Now, first of all, let's talk about ark. The word for ark just means box. That's all it means. If it had been a ship, that's the word that would have been used here. Now, this is going to be my slight critique of the work of Ken Ham and the Answers in Genesis people. I believe that they have strayed a little bit from some of the historical accounts and some of the language here, that the ark was not a ship. It was a box. And so I really believe that, as nice as that ark encounter is down there, that they've maybe tried to turn it into a ship too much. And I've also noticed that they kind of poo-poo some of the eyewitness accounts of people who have described a box-shaped thing up there at the higher altitudes of Mount Ararat, and instead have kind of pointed off to some places that have more of a ship shape to them. And so I'm going to disagree in a kind way with my brothers and sisters in Christ that take the other tact, and they can do the same thing toward me. In the Hebrew and in the Greek, the word ark means box, squared, or rectangular. Now, the gophar wood, that's just Hebrew being drug over into English approximation. In the Greek Old Testament, which I've told you repeatedly, is 3rd century BC translation from Hebrew to Greek made by people who were quite familiar with both languages. In the Greek Old Testament, it is basically the idea of squared lumber, meaning that it has been squared off, shaped in a square form, like 2x4s and 4x8s and whatever it is. So that sort of idea of worked lumber. Gophar, nobody knows for sure what the word in Hebrew means, unless, of course, you go to the Septuagint and believe that the Hebrew speakers of that time knew what they were talking about when they said that it was squared lumber. So make yourself this great big gigantic box out of squared lumber. That's what he was told. Make rooms in this box and cover it inside and out with pitch. Now, bitumen or pitch was used for waterproofing, still is to this day. And so this is a gigantic box that is going to be waterproofed inside and out because it's going to be in the water for a year. Verse number 15. This is how you are to make it. The length of it, of this box, is going to be 300 cubits. Now, a cubit in New Testament time is pretty much 18 inches. It was understood to be from the elbow to the tip of the middle finger on an average-sized male. Now, it just so happens I'm an average-sized male from that history period. I'm 5'9", and my cubit is exactly 18 inches. However, it has been known for a very, very long time that there was a longer cubit, referred to sometimes as a royal cubit, that makes appearances in the Old Testament. Book of Ezekiel, when it describes the temple that the Jewish people were supposed to build when they came back from their exile, specifies that it was to be the long or royal cubit that was used in the measurements. This royal cubit, I believe, was based on a larger human being that existed in the pre-flood period. We know that the fossil record has larger plants and larger animals of the same kind of our period. And so it's not surprising that we would expect larger humans in the pre-flood period. The royal cubit is basically 20.7 inches long, which is the sort of cubit, ratio-wise, that you would find on a man well over 7 feet. And so that may have been the size of Noah when he was using the cubit here. So all of that long-winded explanation is to basically tell you I am fully convinced that the ark cubit should be counted as 20.7 inches rather than the 18 inches. And so your footnotes in your Bible may in fact give the size of the ark here in a footnote based on an 18-inch cubit. And that's fine. I just want you to be aware. I think it's even bigger. So 300 cubits, if you use the long cubit, is 517 and a half feet. That's monstrous. Its breadth, so from side to side, is to be 50 cubits. And so that's 86 feet, 3 inches. And that might be an interior measurement that we're talking about here. And its height, the tallness of it, is to be 30 cubits. And so that's 51 feet 9 inches, according to the longer cubit. So this is one big box that's going to be waterproofed here. It says next in verse 16, make a roof for the ark, and that is going to be very important because this thing is going to be in some rough seas. But some of the footnotes and other places have suggested that the word roof here from our English Standard Version might be better translated as a window in the ark. And so there's some debate back and forth. Do you want a window in something that's going to be in very bad weather and seas? And you probably wouldn't want windows on the side, but you might want one on the top. And a lot of the older depictions of the Ark as a box have shown like a ridge line across the top of it at the center of the roof that is raised up and allows light and air to come in on both sides. And so that's the way they've interpreted it. And I don't see that as a bad thing. It would keep most of the water from slopping in or raining in, but it would still provide some light and ventilation. But since we're talking about light, I will remind you that the Jewish people have a longstanding tradition that this is a reference to a glowing pearl that God gave to Noah to take into the ark with him to provide light throughout the voyage. And I find that rather intriguing. Anyway, verse 16, make a roof or a window for the ark, finish it to a cubit above. And so that's the reason for the idea of raising that central ridge line about 20.7 inches above the center. And then set a door of the ark in its side. So there is to be a door, probably for the top deck. We're about to read that they're going to make three decks in it. So each deck is going to be about 10 cubits. And so the top deck door, if that's where the door is at, and I think it probably is going to be 20 cubits above the base of the ark itself. So probably well above the water line for when it's floating. So this door is to be set in the side, only one, which is quite interesting for our applications later. Make it with lower, second, and third decks. And so these decks, if we take the long cubit again, each one of them is going to be about 17 and a quarter feet of height. If you take all of the flooring or ceiling in, maybe it's 15 feet or something like that. That's still a lot of headroom for each of these decks. And each deck can then be subdivided up into probably several levels. Verse number 17. Here's the reason why he's going to make it. For behold, I will bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh in which is the breath of life under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall die. So all land-breathing animals are going to die from water, from the flood. And so a big box, waterproofed box, with three levels in it, needs to be built to house the humans and the representative sample of all of animal life that is going to be moved from pre-flood to post-flood. Verse 18. I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. Now, again, I will stress here that in the Greek Septuagint, as we were going over the generations, it was pretty common that you didn't start having kids until after you were 100 years of age. And then you would have probably had them for the next 400 years. So these sons are all just slightly under 100 years of age or thereabouts. And they don't have any kids. And they're said to have wives, but that is very typical in Scripture to be a reference also to betrothed wives. That is, wives that you have not yet gone through some sort of ceremony and started having a family together with them, but you're attached. And so these appear to be the last three sons of Noah and Mrs. Noah that are still living at home when the flood comes. And their wives, because they are betrothed to them, are going to be brought on board the ark as well. And this will be the three families that restart planet Earth. At one time, I was thinking Noah and Mrs. Noah, they might have still had more kids, but I've come to the conclusion that they've probably moved into that age, into their 500s, when you don't have kids anymore, even though you're living a good long life. So it's just going to be these three families. So verse number 19, of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. So now we go back to the reality that God designed all of these land animals, these air-breathing animals that either walked around or slithered or crawled around on the earth, or that's where they nested, that's where they rested, was on the earth. That would include the flyers and stuff that rested. So all of these animals are dual gender, male, female. And so God is telling him, you're going to take a breeding pair of each of these animals. Now later, we will see that certain types of animals, there will be three pair plus a spare taken on board. I'll explain that when we come to it. Verse number 20. Of the birds, or remember, these are the flyers, because they would include the bat kind. Of the flyers, according to their kinds, and of the animals, according to their kinds, of every creeping thing of the ground, according to its kind, two of every sort shall come into you to keep them alive. So these are going to be the representative sample of life that needs to be restarted on the other side of the flood. Now, we don't need two of every type of cat, and we don't need two of every type of cow, and we don't need two of every type of dog or bird or whatever it is. Remember, a kind is a breeding group. And so we're going to go back, and God is going to direct, by his sovereign ability, his sovereign will, he's going to direct an animal pair smack dab in the middle of a nice deep gene pool to come to Noah and his family, and that kind is going to be taken on board of the ark as the seed stock for the post-flood animal world, so that that kind can start breeding and spreading out just like it did at the very beginning. And there's no need for it to be like a full-grown monster animal. Think about some of the reptiles. They never stop growing their entire life. And so that's why we have some dinosaurs, as we refer to them. They're just monstrous. And yet they all started out of small eggs. And so don't think of Noah having to jam the ark full of monster-sized animals. All he needs is a representative pair, even a young pair, that will be able to start breeding once the flood is over and repopulate the earth. Some of our friends, like at Answers in Genesis, they have estimated, by going over the kinds, as we've just described them, that the average size of the animals going on the ark were probably the size of sheep. Some would be bigger than that, but others would be much smaller than that. And so there is more than enough room on the ark for all the different kinds that will repopulate the earth after the flood is finished. Now, they're also told to do this. Verse 21, also take with you every sort of food that is eaten and store it up. It shall serve as food for you and for them. Now, the original design was vegetarian diets for all animals and all people. Now, that might have changed because of the sin problems that had coming in. Maybe some of the monkeying around with the genetic codes of both people and animals. But for God's purposes, only the vegetarian kind that he'd originally designed and planned for is coming on board this ark. So that's the only type of food you have to bring on board. You don't have to worry about the animals eating the carnivores eating the herbivores, because they're all herbivores that are going on the ark. The lion kind, the big cat kind, if you want to put it that way, they're not going to be munching on the bovine kind. They're all eating vegetarian diets. And there's plenty of room for that as well. And I'll mention some possibilities of why they didn't even need to have the animals all awake and active the whole time. We'll finish with verse 22 today. Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. So he believes God and acts upon it, which is the whole idea of faith that we see in Hebrews chapter number 11.